morning, my friends.
It's nice to see some very, very familiar faces. So, good. I think we need to be very simple this morning. Because the more simple we are, then the more opportunity, there will be to, if we could use the vernacular expression, to get what it is this is all about. You have gone, and as we say time and time again, you have read everything there is to read. If we put it all together in this room, we could have tomes as vast as the Egyptian treasuries, you see, of all kinds of matter. And yet, the yearning does not end. There is the wakening in the night, and the pain is there. There is the feeling of trying desperately to hold all compartments of life together in some way, hoping that they will not go out of balance, that they will not go out of harmony, so that a certain amount of peace can be yours. And then you get upstarts that say things like, the kinds of peace that you're experiencing are very, very minor in comparison to what is really yours to experience. Which only brings up a more difficult frustration, because now you know that that little that you've hung on to is not the whole of it. And that somehow it seems that there is this mysterious something that underlies all of this that you can taste and feel and pray for and hope for and believe in, and yet cannot have the full flood of it in your awareness. And so you come on beautiful days like this and sit in rooms like this so that you can again attempt to allow yourself to break through that which is the separating part of consciousness. My friends, we will just simply recreate and restate things that you already know. No one in this room needs any new information. You do not need anything other than two things which you have, which is your willingness, or you would not be here, and your own physical psyche and body and imagination and expectation, which you have because you are here. So you have all of the deep components. What is really the only missing piece, if we could talk about it this way, within this system, allowing that there are many different kinds of ways to approach. This is not the way. And I beg you not to ever confuse this as the way. It is a way. And as a way, it can take you, some of you, a certain length of while, and then other things come in that take you whatever needs to be done. This is never to be seen, please, as an end in itself, but simply a part of the process. If this were an end in itself, how could we say that we have a time limit on our sharing? That would mean that all of you would somehow have to find your way to that point before that moment, and it cannot be this. It cannot be thus. It has to be a part of your own process, your own amazing continuing, your own amazing allowing. And again we say, the only thing that separates you from what we would call this day enlightenment is your belief that you are not enlightened. Again and again, even the most ordinary of people who approach the God Self through some kind of tenacious method, something like Zen or inner prayer or whatever it might be, the dancing of the Sufi, whatever it might be, all of those approaches, when they obtain that which is what they've sought, what do they say? They say, not only have I always been enlightened, but the entire universe is enlightened as well. There is nowhere in this creation where enlightenment is not present. It is everywhere in all times and in all places. And it is simply a motion of your being to move in ever-expanding realms and motions of energy to allow yourself not to move toward that, because that is goal. If you move toward it, then it means you are here and goal is there, and you have to do something. You know, you're here and the goal's there, and you have to get there. And then the questions come up. How do I get there? How do I do that? What is this process? And this is not the way, please, to see it, because then this puts you in some kind of a stress. You know, finding God was not meant to add to your stress level. But I'm afraid that in many cases it has done precisely this. In some cases, it has become the greatest stress, and it was not the way it was intended. It was intended, in fact, to be a kind of sense of letting go and allowing that which is always present to begin to bubble up through all of the limiting idea filters that you have placed there. It's as if you have played this game of knowing that you were God, and then hiding from the reality that you were that, and now you're allowing yourself in some ways to come back to it. These are just ways of talking about this process. And as you sit here this day, what we need to be so simple about is to realize that that which you seek is present, absolutely, abundantly, totally, and completely present in this moment, in this place, in this space, within you, outside of you, within each all of you, within this whole structure, in everything and every motion that is present, that substance is there. So there is no going and getting it. There is no, you know, some people have the idea that if they get themselves shiny, bright enough, that maybe the light will shine on them, you know? And so you go around trying to shine yourself up, and that means you try to purify, and you try to become holy, and you try to never think a negative thought, and you try to always be kind and loving, and so on, and realizing, of course, in the end, that you aren't shiny enough. So you continue to try to shine yourselves up in whatever way. My friends, the shining process is for your own enjoyment. It has nothing to do with knowing you are the light. Is it not a ludicrous thought of the light having to shine itself up in order to know itself to be light? Is it not a strange kind of a thought form that says that that which you are is something that you have to find and become worthy of? To become worthy of being what you already are. Those are strange quirks that the mind will take you down. And all you need to remember is from the depth of your being, from the oldest times until this moment today, what you have to do, my friends, is make a decision. I want you to deeply contemplate today, in this place, in this time, is your decision to believe and to increase your belief that you are the enlightened one. Or are you not? This is a basic choice that comes out of your consciousness. There is one day in your lifespan that you must make this decision. You have all danced with this idea in varying forms for various lifetimes and lifetimes. Is it possible that in this lifetime you are willing to believe two things: that God is, and that you are that as well, exactly as you are, without having to change anything, without having to throw things out, to cram things in, without having to remove and realign, but to simply be willing to take the truth of what you are and to concentrate on that truth moment after moment. So we're going to begin. If you would close your eyes, please, and assume the position of meditation. Please turn your awareness to your breath. Just simply allow breathing to be the focus of your awareness. Just gently focus on breathing. Now, your mind, your thoughts, your beliefs have constructed a false filter. And although that filter is made up of idea, it is stronger than steel. But the wonder of it is, it can be dissolved in an instant. You begin the dissolution with the most powerful tool you have, which is imagination with intention. Imagination with intention. This first session of meditation will follow this line, please. As you breathe in and out, as you feel the rising and falling of breath, some of you will do it in the hara, the abdomen. Some of you will do it in the heart chakra. Others of you do it as the air enters and exits the nose. Whatever is the point that you feel the rising and falling, the in and out of breath, I want you, please, to, on the in-breath, just simply visualize and feel. Please hear that second part. Feel. With the total intention of bringing in the God power, whatever that means to you, whether that means light, whether that means energy and motion, whether that means something that is deeply yours within, to just feel as you bring it in, and in the it comes into the body, and on the exit breath, my friends, I want you, please, to push past. As you exit, I want you, please, to make yourself vaster. With each exit breath, you move out of the confines of your physical body. You push against your flesh. You push out of that which you think has trapped you. By this visual intention, you give your psyche the permission to experience that which is the non-physical. I repeat, you give the psyche the permission to experience that which is the non-physical. As you push outside of the body, leaving body where it is, the container where things rise and fall, and allow yourself to push yourself out of that into the space around, and begin, please, to allow yourself to feel what that space feels like. That space is filled with what you're looking for. As you do this moment after moment, certain things should begin to happen. Let's not say what they will be. Each of you will experience it in your own way. But please, for the first round, in the intake of the breath, it's as if you gather up and allow yourself to be filled with whatever it is in your imaginings is the stuff of God's self. And then in the expanded breath, you take it and return it back through the body and out gently, gently, and creatively into the space around you. Again and again. Allow that to have its own way. How vast it moves. Don't let it be a mental process. To begin to experience that which is the non-physical. That is the whole purpose of this first intention. Here's. Your eyes tell you that you are something, you know not what, crammed inside a body that looks out, reaches out with hearing, reaches out to touch, to become one with. All the senses tell you that this is who you are. And yet, there runs through you constantly the question, is that all? Yes, yes, that's all true, but is that all? Is that all? And it's that part of you that brings you to this kind of questing. Is that all? The difficulty here, my friends, is you have allowed your ego minds to answer your question. You have said, is that all? And the ego mind says, no, no, it's not all, but let me tell you what it is. The all is this, and it's this, and it's this, and it's God, and he's big, and he's tall, and he scolds you, and he doesn't love you, and that, yes, there's more, and this is what it is. And then, do you understand? Then the ego mind answers the question, and answers it in such a way that you become frightened. Do you really want to know that this isn't all and have that other idea be the all that is there? So there is this dual nature going on. The questing continues. The ego mind loves to answer. In fact, one of the things that's, part of the fun of being on the so-called spiritual path is you can keep talking about it. You know, and your ego mind can say, no, no, it's this way. And then the other says, no, no, it's this way. And you can have wars over this issue. The whole world can be divided into camps of whose ego manifestation is right. Well, the reason for these kinds of coming together is not to answer, because there is no answer. There is only experiencing. And if there's anything we have screamed at you, lo, these many 13 years, is that your mind has infinite fun playing with you. There's nothing wrong with mind. It's wonderful, wondrous, magnificent, abundantly beautiful for what it does. God doesn't do very well balancing the checkbook. You know, you have to use the mind aspect of God, not the inspirational aspect of God. But when we come to want to answer this deep yearning, which is, what is the nature of this more? None of you doubt there's more. There's no one in this room that doubts, really. Now, the mind can say, oh, but you have no proof. But no matter what they say, no matter what the world says, there is this overriding something that keeps running through you, that awakens you in the night and that pushes you through in the day, that keeps questing and nagging and jumping at your heels as you go through your life, saying, what is the nature of this more? What is it? And I would tell you that all of the great religious tomes arise out of this one question. If you stop with the reading of the tomes, you've lost it. If you can understand that all of the great teachings, and they are great, are simply fumblings of different layers of different people's awareness trying to bring into some kind of mental, verbal clarity that which is mysteriously unexplainable. And when you allow your mind to answer your question, you've missed it. You know, they say this constantly. The reason that the people in Zen talk about the razor's edge and how easy it is to fall off is the minute that you start answering your own question, you've fallen off. It doesn't matter what answer you come up with. Now, techniques are absolutely important. Do not misunderstand me. I am not saying you have to wander around without any technique, because if you do, you will find you're doing nothing. You will find you're just spinning your mind, going here and going there and going back over all the old material. So what I'm asking, I think any body of information is trying to present, is to make your way through all of the morass of the possible answers, finding them to be faulty in some way or other, but yet staying with the technique through it into the end. People sit in Zen meditation for 20 years doing the same thing, and in their minds every other day they write, what am I doing this for? This is very stupid. Never mind sitting there, but then they're there the next day, they're there the next day. The difference, of course, if you've heard before, between the saint and the sinner is the saint never quit. You know, it's the only difference. And when we're talking in terms of technique, when we're talking in terms of tools, if you will, your responsibility is to amass the tools that have meaning for you and then persevere with them until they, one, either prove to really have no value for you, or two, until they bring you to the goal that is whatever your goal is within. I have said it again, and let us repeat it. There are many, many ways. And out one of the exciting and yet sometimes confusing world of the so-called New Age is this very phenomenon. You don't have to do anything other than pick up the weekly publication from any New Age journal to find out that you have vast choices of how to approach that which is already totally present within you. But as you begin to be responsible for finding those few clear, definite techniques and inroads, and being willing to subjugate yourself to their tyranny, you will begin to realize. People get very upset when I say, you're going to have to work. I don't want to work. You know, if I'm already God, then I don't need to do anything. It's all present. I say, well, if you know that, then what do you have to work for? You know it. It is you. You are that. But the answer, of course, is no matter what the mind might say, until you feel the motion, until you feel the power thundering through you, until you are able to sit in the midst of a heart-wrenching, painful dilemma of the heart, and at the same time be able to feel in and around and through it some power that is also present within the context and within and without whatever you are experiencing, then you are not at that place where you can say you were at the heart of your searching. Please understand, we do not say your life is going to stop having dilemmas in it. It is the nature of life to have change, and change can be seen as painful. That is the basic motivation of all that goes in the duality of things. So there is no hope of stopping the rising and falling of the changing. But what is the hope of this day and days like this that you find in your life, wherever you can, is to begin to truly ignite and expand the power that moves in and around whatever the situation. That is why I asked you to begin to push yourself outside of the body. We're going to try something else, which might not be as much fun. But I want you to really understand to what degree you influence that area that is right around your physical body. You move around in this world, it's very interesting, as if you were just a self-contained unit, you know, one of those plastic bottles, you know, around you, and like you put your cheese in, you know, and you put the cheese in and put the top on and that's that. And you move around your world like this. This is the view you have. But in actuality, that is not true at all. That so-called plastic dome is absolutely filled and permeated with openings that move out, and the cheesiness of you, if you will, is constantly merging with the cheesiness of other, and most especially first with what is around your physical body. It is constantly influencing you and you influencing it. You know, if we want to talk in scientific terms, let's just for a moment, without going in too deeply, let's just think in terms of this miraculous thing called the DNA. We've talked about the DNA before, but you know, they have found that there are miles and miles of DNA strands just interwoven within the physical body. And this DNA has this marvelous ability to have everything unborn residing in it. There's something going on here, my friends. And even if you don't think in terms of God, you have to really begin to be alive to the reality that things get affected by people's presence. When they began to find in the laboratory that the person doing the experiment absolutely had something to do with the outcome of the experiment, things began to be very, very shaky. Because now we cannot have what we could call the separated point of view. We now have someone who is looking for something, and the very act of looking and the very fact of who is doing the looking results in something being found. And someone else right next on can be doing exactly the same thing and find something quite different. And what is the differentiation? It is the input of the person, the persona, the whole energy field, the vortex of the person doing the research that affects the body of the research. Now, that's frightening. To many, many people, we now are on the verge of fear. But it is so wondrous because it is the verge of where you can begin to understand how God moves in your life. You can now begin to have a real sense of how every moment of your life, your cellular structure, as well as the emotional makeup, the mental makeup, the physicality of your whole being, can be changed moment by moment. This is not a lifetime process. I keep saying it can be done, and it can be done quickly. It doesn't have to take as many years to undo as happened. And why? Because when you begin to understand that the mystery is going on outside of you all the time and absolutely inundating you from all parts, are God particles absolutely moving through you, transforming, changing things. You know, they've found that each cell isn't the same within 3 days or 3 hours. I don't know. They have it all figured out very well. You know, you have a whole new body within, what is it, 7 days? I have no idea. Well, then why does it keep looking the same? If you have a different body every 7 days, why is it every day you look in the mirror and say, there you are again, there you are again? And it's only when you don't look at yourself for months and months on end that you look and say, my God, who's that? But you know, there is something going on. For example, if it be true that you redo your liver, you know, every so often, that is always in the process of undoing itself and redoing itself, then why do we have illness? Why do we have the continuity? Why are we not able to then have some kind of a real change in the form of things? Is it because that which determines the form is the belief? Is it possible that it is the deep belief that this is the way things are that keeps making them the way they are, and then again the way they are, and then yet again the way they are? Remember, I've said over and over, science is going to come right in and give you tremendous help in your searching. And this is one of the beginning trace patterns. My friends, things change all the time. The thing that changes it into something that you want is your willingness to be very clear about what you want. And when you are clear to the point of clarity that you really see and know it in your own awareness, you will manifest it. It is not the other way around. You create what you experience. It is, I know that all of the world tells you it is the difference. That all of a sudden there is something and that your job is how do I respond to it. I would like to say to you that that's like first grade math. It won't hold up when you start getting into physics. It won't hold up when you get into quantum theories. It simply won't hold up. Because the reality is that there is nothing out there that you look at and then respond to. It is that you have the response, it goes out there, and then you experience it. And 95% of you in this room don't believe me for a minute. Yet. Yet. Because if you did, finished, then you know. Then you know. This is the ineffable wonder that calls on all of your good humor to tolerate such outrageous statements. You know, you should all just throw rotten tomatoes and get out. You know, but this is an outrageous thing. But it is true. And you know it's true. Whether you are able to understand how to make it more true or not is another thing. But there is a part of you that knows. Now, I'd like to bring something else in here that I've said it before in various places, but I'd like to really restate it. There is a lot of idea going around in all kinds of therapy and so on and so on, that all of you, or some of you, do not think well of yourself, that you don't have any sense of your own beauty and your own wonder and your own delight and your own place in the universe, your own holy ground upon which you stand. If I might spend just a few moments, I would like to tell you that that is not true. The reason that you get angry when someone does not see you the way that you want to be seen, when they find fault with you, when they humiliate you, when they make fun of you, when they give you a view of yourself that is desperately hopeless, when anyone does anything like that to you, the reason that you respond is because you know that you have been violated. You know it. And where does that "I know it" come from? It comes from that place. You do not have to try to be worthy. You know you're worthy. What you have to remove is the ideas given to you that you are not worthy. Therein lies the key to the release. Do you understand what I'm saying? You know within the total cellular wonder of your being that you are a creation of the God consciousness, and you know it without doubt. And you know that you stand, wherever you stand, is holy ground, and that it is yours, and you have the birthright of the space that you occupy, and you know it. And all of the confusion that comes as all of the other pictures overlay it, but I will tell you something. You don't lay down and take it and believe it. You respond in whatever way and however minor a way you respond. You become angry. You become indignant. You become self-righteous. You become all of the things that people scold you for. And I would like to say, good for you. I would like to say, those of you that lay down and say, oh, do it again. Say it again. Tell me again. What a jackass I am. Tell me again. Oh, I need to know this. You know, I'm asking you to reverse the way you are responding, because you have to understand the integrity of consciousness. The integrity of consciousness knows They know the value of every one of you absolutely, and anything that comes that does not fit in alignment with that knowing is going to have a negative response from you. Those of you who have children, when you start bringing up their negative pictures, and what is their response? Oh, thank you, Mom. Oh, Mother, I'm so glad you see me this way. It's wonderful that you think I'm a fool. Isn't it wonderful that you think I'm incapable, that I'm immature, that I lose my shoes, or whatever it might be. What I'm asking you to look deeply, not at changing your patterns. That's entirely up to you. This isn't a class on, child raising. It is, I hope, a class on consciousness raising, in the sense that you understand deeply why so many of you carry around these patterns. They are your obviously legitimate response to information that belies the truth of who you are. And your response is, I don't like it. I don't like it. That's not who I am. I may act that way. I may have this character. I may do this occasionally. I may, yes, that's all right. And all that may be, but that is not who I am. And to say that that is who I am is to make me less, and I will not be made less. Now, it is that place in you, my friends, that I'm addressing as we go through these exercises this morning. That place in you that knows that every moment you are being recreated in God's image. I'd like to say that again. Every moment you are being recreated in God's image. Now, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. And when we come back for the meditation, I want us to start with this. Please think about what I just said. Every moment you are being recreated in God's image. Now, absolutely in alignment with this is, let us just take, you are standing there. Someone says to you, you are a purple rhinoceros, something that you don't like. You have two choices. You can let that view create you. Or you can remember what we've just said, which is every moment you are being recreated in God's image. Which means that you can allow that view of you to simply move away. And to choose to remember this simple statement, and then quietly begin to remember inside of you what God's image means. And that's what we're going to deal with when we get back. Who are you going to participate with in creating you? That which is the outside world, or that which is the God self? Which are you going to choose? Because make no mistake, you recreate yourself constantly. Your self-confidence can be destroyed in 1 minute. With the proper person, with the proper words, with the proper approach, your life, the day is gray. And the day can go on for weeks, gray, dead. But you created that. You chose that as your creator. And that is not the only choice. So when we come back, let's talk about how that happened. So, 10 minutes, please.
All right, then. You've all heard, again and again and again, lo, these many years, that you create your own reality. And I'm sure that some of you are absolutely furious every time you hear this. And so, understandably, so let's go deeply into it. Let's just not leave it at that. Let's try to bring it closer to consciousness. And I think one way that you can do that is to really apply your own mind, your own awareness, your own logic to the wholeness of this seemingly seemingly true statement that you create your own reality. Now, until you really know it, I suggest that you put the knowing on hold. Let's just not say, oh, some windbag on some Saturday on Quincy Street said it, therefore it's true. No, that's not it. But I want you to really take it in and begin to, you know, Krishnamurti had the right idea, to begin to examine things, not with your mind so much, but as with all of your knowing. You have a lot of knowing, innate knowing that moves into everything. Now, let us assume that you want to understand deeply what it is and how it works and so on. Well, one of the first things I'd ask you to think about is, what do you create it out of? What do you create your reality out of? You know how to take paper and create something out of paper. But you do not know how to create a tree. With all of the best part of your awareness, you could not create a tree. But once the tree has done its own creating and has presented something, then you can take it from there and do some creating of your own. All right, we all know that. So how can we then say that you are creating your reality, if even as you begin to feel inside yourself that you cannot really create a tree and so on and so on? All right, now I am going to go so far out here that some of you are just going to fall off. And if you come back, good. If you don't, well, that's good too. But in order to even begin to touch on this and make it yours, you have got to start asking yourself, all right, if I create my own reality, and I know that the limited eye of my mind, my thoughts don't create it in the way that I think they do, my emotions don't create it in the way that I think they do, my body does not create this tree, I know all of this, then what is this I that creates the reality? You see, the question is, what is the definition of the I of you that creates the reality? You create the reality. Who is this you? This, I think, is the most exciting thing that you have to really contemplate. Instead of staring endlessly at the things that you've created, you know, it's staring yet again and again, you know, you look at your messy relationships, you look at your messy, you know, emotional body, you look at your mind that's always forgetting this and that, and so you say, I'm creating, and all, on one level, thinking that you create your own reality is so despondent that you might want to say, I want out of here. I mean, if this is the best I can do, then let's quit. Let's let something else take place. All right. So the question is not that there's anything wrong, but we need to delve into the depth of this. So when you begin to ask the question, who is it in me, if you want to put it this way, or what is it in me that creates my own reality, then we're beginning to touch closer and closer to truth of things. When you begin to say, with my conscious mind, I cannot fool myself into believing that my limited emotions, my limited thoughts, my limited physical body can really create the vastness that I know is out there. So if the truth is that you are the creator, then the question arises every moment, and you know exactly where I'm going, Miss Martin, the question arises, who is it? Who is it that creates the reality? If you'd like another way of saying it, what is it that creates the reality? This is a question that all of the great seekers have cracked their awareness against until it gave up its secret, because this is where the secret lies. If you believe and stop at the belief that your finite mental, ever-changing thoughts and your ever vacillating emotions and your rather limited body create the total vastness of things, you are fooling yourself. And you, having integrity, do not want to fool yourself. So there comes the deep question. Either you throw the whole subject out and never think of it again and say, well, God creates everything, which is what they've done up until this time, or you begin to be what I would call the serious student of the subject of consciousness. What is it? You know, you say it all the time. You know, all of the time. Oh, yes, pure conscious awareness. Or, yes, this is awareness. Or, yes, you create with consciousness, so on. But when we begin to pin it down, things get very slippery. You know, this is why many people do not believe in the so-called New Age, right at this point. You lose a lot of people who could really be the deep seekers, because right here they begin to get to go into disbelief. They do not believe that with their little small, what I call small mind, small emotion, small awareness, that they could create the vastness, the incredible intricacy of the DNA, of all of the expansion of consciousness throughout all time space, to create vast realities that have been proven by people's own experiential data to be real. They cannot believe and refuse to fall into just assuming that they can do this. That is the, I think, the mature presentation of consciousness to the moment, which is, you're right. You are right. That which is that small part of you is not capable of creating the incredible vastness, wonder, infinite beauty and harmony that is the reality of things. How can something disharmonious create harmony? How can something filled with doubt create perfect hope, perfect knowing, perfect beauty? How can something which thinks itself to be ugly, to be deformed, to be somehow imperfect, and that is what you've been taught, that somehow you are imperfect, how can that which believes that create perfection? How can it be? And when the people approach this whole body of information and they run into this, they fall. Now, what I'm asking you is to be victorious, and many of you have already dealt with this in many ways. Remember the rules. This is not the great know-it-all. And you are the great stupid ones who have come to be taught. This is not it. What it is that something here in the wonder of the moment is just listening to itself. Just as this awareness listens to you and therefore elicits some things out of this, it is the hope that as you listen to this, something is elicited out of you. Do you understand? It's very simple dynamic. Good morning. It's nothing complicated. It's very easeful. But in order to really examine, we have to come to this thing of the who is the I? Who is the created? Who is the creating? How does this work? When we really examine it, you have to begin to shut your eyes and take not a leap of faith, but a leap of consciousness. You have to begin to feel that you have a mind and emotions and body, and they're all there, and you don't try to dissolve them, to think them away. Have you ever tried to think away your thoughts? You know that wonderful old story, everybody gets down, gets ready to meditate, and the leader says, now everything is fine, just don't think of monkeys. And then, of course, we have nothing but monkey mayas everywhere, all over. Because That is the nature of it. All right, so being aware of being sweetly, gently, humorously, did you get that last word? Humorously aware of the drama, the emotional drama, the mental drama, the physical drama that's always ongoing, and knowing this accumulation of drama is creating the vastness of consciousness, don't be silly. You can answer your own question. Can your confusion create incredible harmony? You don't need to go outside of your own awareness to answer that. You don't have to move anywhere. You know that that which you have identified as you is totally incapable of creating all of the majesty that begins to be seen, that's unfolding. Just as a small example, the wonder of the DNA, again and again it will come up, because make no mistake, the DNA is going to be one of the biggest, most exciting, magnificent teachers in the whole physical, mental, emotional component of consciousness. It's absolutely exciting. Absolutely. Watch as it goes through the next 3 years. Fascinating. So as you begin to feel that and to experience that, you know deeply inside of you there's something better. Remember, we said you all know there is something other. You know there is something bigger, vaster, more magnificent. You know it. You don't have to be convinced. It is part of the being of you. So then, as you lay aside the little idea that this small, confused, sometimes whimpering, self-pitying, does that bad enough, little part of you is going to somehow create this majesty. You either have to believe that and feel very foolish and cut yourself off from your own logic, or you have to go somewhere else. You know, again and again, people say that people are turned away from religion because there is a point where the logic doesn't work. And right here is where the New Age awareness bangs into people's consciousness. But if I could define the New Age, and you know, there is no such thing in one sense, because you are the New Age. You yourself, you, your own awareness is going to create the new age for yourself in your own way. But if I were to put a blanket statement on it, we could say that the new age is going to be that time when all of you as creators know from the basis of your being that you create your own reality. And that you begin to not despair at that, but delight at that, and begin to play with that, and begin to create. I tried to touch on it last Sunday in the general meeting when I said, that was last Sunday, wasn't it? Yes, yes, I'm not very good at that. When I tried to say that there is a lot of fear that goes around the idea that all of the calendars are ending. You know, all of the great calendars of consciousness are ending. And of course, as we said, the gloom and doom people say, well, that must mean that the earth is ending and is going to explode, or it's going to be inundated or something. And all right, that's one point of view. I would like for you to consider the possibility that maybe it means something much more expansively delightful and exciting, which is that it cannot be written, because you are going to be writing it every minute of your moment. You are going to be creating a reality that cannot be predictable in the old way. Meaning that enough of you, and this is going to have to take enough of you, and it's going to happen. If I did not believe that, I would have quit this job a long time ago. It is going to happen. It is going to happen. Enough of you are going to be listening on days like this, allowing yourself to deeply examine this whole concept, and you're going to begin to ask that part of the world psyche that is here to teach you, to guide you, to show you, to do that for you. Now, I have said again and yet again, when you want to know an answer, when your being begins to churn with it, then the answers begin to come. The other way, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Well, that's one way. But the other way is when the question is in place, the answer appears. But the question has to be firmly in place. You want to know what's going on, don't you? Don't you want to know how this all works? Doesn't it interest you to know how two people seated in the same room, having the same experience, can have two totally different experiences of it and can be life-changing for one and death-producing for another? There's something magic here. This is not a dead universe with answers just coming down like a television screen. There is something much more majestic. And when you begin to really grapple and begin to get excited about the ability to remove from your awareness, from your experience, from your whole creation, those things which absolutely give you a stomach ache, and put some things in place that give you light in your heart, when you really decide that maybe you are an alchemist, that maybe they've meant this all along, then you become serious. This is not a new concept. In the very beginning, all of those wonderful alchemists, I mean, this goes way back. Nothing is new. In consciousness, nothing is new because it's all in there from the very beginning. From the very beginning, way past that which is your recorded awareness. Way past when, you know, when you speak of this globe, you can't, and I know people, some of you don't like it when I talk this way, but that's all right. Just be tolerant. Bring up your tolerance and give me some of it. That this planet has not just experienced all of the life forms as you experience them now. A lot more has been going on here for a lot longer. And we don't need to know places and times and what they looked like and what they wore and what their shoes were like and what their heads were shaped like. It's irrelevant. All you need to know is that awareness has been expanding, developing, making itself deeper, vaster, and more grand as all of this magnificent motion has been going on. There is no such thing as constancy in the sense of rapidity of the sameness in God. There is no rapidity of the sameness in God. It is constantly experiencing itself, and in the experiencing of it, it changes itself. I know. Do you understand that? Thank you. The words are difficult. Just bear with me. Mr. Merrick, may I have your crystal a moment? Thank you. Something like this, which represents this magnificent crystal, which represents how many eons in your lifespan of thought to create itself, to become an awareness that is this magnificent manifestation. And as it experiences itself in the depths of the earth, it experiences itself in one way. When it goes through the birthing process, when it is taken up out of the earth and becomes something different, broken away from part of its source, changed, transformed, made different shapes by any kind of alchemy, either the alchemy of machinery or the alchemy of rain or element or whatever it might be, it begins to experience itself in another way. It is no longer experiencing itself as it did in the dark, in the depths of the ground of consciousness. All right? Understood. Now it comes into this world, the created world of mankind, and someone presents it to you, or you purchase, whatever it might be, and in Mr. Merrick taking it and holding it, this begins to experience itself in another way now. Now it has something other that changes its experience. It is not the same. It is not the same. And the interesting thing that you're going to find, those of you who have been following the circles in England. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about? There have been, if you could find that photograph, if it's in Mary Morley's birth, these wonderful circles that they're finding all over England in the summertime. Something at night descends on these fields, different kinds of grain fields usually, and makes some kinds of patterns overnight and then leaves. there is this whole idea of who does it. You know, well, some of them are done by hoaxers, but the hoaxers leave their staff in the middle so that they can make a perfect circle, and the hole is right there for everyone to observe. So that is not... Oh, you can't find it. I can't imagine why. All right, now... And then they go on, and they have people, all the psychics from the world come and say, oh, it's this and this and this. Now, the interesting thing is, the what I would call the relatively conservative people have decided they're UFOs. Because the alternative is so much more frightening that it's not a UFO, that they have, do you understand, that they've decided, oh, it's got to be a UFO. Because the alternative, that it is not a physical thing, that it is indeed energy in motion, that something is empowering and changing, is too much. They say, oh, it's those UFO people. And, so now it's they keep moving, to the more logical. Well, the first ones were very, very simple. They just had perhaps a circle with another circle within, or a main circle and, say, four alongside and so on. Very simple. I would like to show you a photograph taken at, I think it's 1,000 feet, of the ones that has, one that has just appeared. In one night, without anyone knowing anything except the dogs were barking in the village. Can you see it? In one night, silently, what is it? Who is it? How is it? Is this not a mystery? Is this not magic of some incredible source? Now, to follow this, they have taken these bits of grass, whatever kinds of grass that were there, and they have put them under tremendous inspection. And what they have found, please hear this, they have found that the cellular components, the makeup of the grasses, have been changed. They have been changed. They are not the same. One that is just a few inches away, that has not received the direct implant of it, remains as it is. You can harvest it, do what you will. But the ones that have been touched by this energy, whatever it is, have transmuted. Now, I keep saying that all of the signs are going to begin to come to give you hope, to give you courage, to give you that says, yes, yes, it's hard, and sometimes it's very, very lonely. But it's worth doing. Whatever this is worth doing. Now, the reason that we bring this up is to let you know that just as that energy touches these fields and changes their reality, it also changes their experience of themselves. Now, that is a little bit harder for a machine to register. It is very difficult to have this crystal be able to tell you or to share with you that it doesn't experience itself the same way. And after Mr. Merrick hands it here, now it is again experiencing itself in a different way. It isn't the same. It is different. And if it could give of its information, it would do that. And as I say, science is going to begin to let you see how instantly, when two energy fields touch upon each other, they change each other. Now, the important thing to remember is what I just said. They change each other. I didn't say that the energy that touches the wheat field remains the same, did I? I said they change each other. You are part of the most incredible, exciting thing that you could possibly be a part of. Now, all of this wind, may I keep this up here, Mr. Murphy? All of this wind that we've been giving you all these years, why? To let you know that that which is waiting to come in as these energy fields to make the circle waits for your saying, come on. Now, all right, some marvelous man says to me at break, he has these difficult feelings, he's trying to move through them. He doesn't like feeling sad, resentful, whatever it might be. And he has decided, somewhere in him, he has decided that he is going to let the wind of God or the wind of consciousness or something, some kind of power is going to, at his opening and bidding, is going to move through him and make changes. And that's exactly what he is beginning to do. And it happens. And that is all this is about. We say it as many ways as we can, and I am very grateful for your patience, but it is so simple that I ask you to remember these fields and to realize that just as the marvelous power that makes the shapes of consciousness in these fields in the summertime, that same energy is constantly reshaping at your beckoning. Reshaping you in whatever way. Your liver, your thoughts, your emotions, your response, anything. The thing that's hard to talk about is that most people would say that this field had no say about what was going to be made upon it. That somehow it was the victim, if you would, of a God experience or energy in motion, that it just lay there supine and helpless, some kind of, dead, inert awareness that had something magnificent imposed on it. And I want to tell you that's not true. Do you remember Glastonbury? All right. Whatever you're feeling about England, about the great British Isles, something marvelous is happening there. And as in the past, they have been the bringers of tremendous new information of all kinds of inner life, so again is it happening. And out of this, I ask you to really get a sense of that field laying there in the night, calling to have something impressed upon it. That it was not some kind of choice of a power outside of itself, but a yearning to have that land be carved in a way, sculpted in a way that would bring beauty and power and awareness, not only to those who look upon it, but to the field itself. There is nothing inert. There is nothing dead. There is nothing laying. Everything is in the state of becoming, is participating in exuberance. Those of you who are aware of the Nazca lines in Peru, it's the very same phenomenon done in a different way. It is the impressing of a high rate of consciousness on a field of awareness that says, please come. If this kind of beauty can be done overnight with the most incredible precision, you cannot imagine the precision. They have gone, they have had a marvelous time, the scientists, because what is happening and this is very disconcerting, so on. So they've done a lot of this and a lot of that. And what they have found is the impeccability of the arcs, of the shapes. What they have found is something absolutely illogical is happening. This is you. You are the field. And you choose. It is as simple as that. In one night, in a span of probably a very short span of a night, this was created. They lay in wait. They try to entrap, because they think, oh, I know, it's going to be there because it was there last year, so it'll be there this year. Well, of course, it never is. It's always, you know, you could say God is always one jump ahead. But there's always that wonderful expansion, moving ever deeper into things. I ask you just to dwell on this because it is what is absolutely possible for you. And the important thing is, as that energy moves into you, it experiences itself differently. You and it together are the co-creators of whatever comes into your world. You choose who your partner of creation is going to be. You will either select that limited self that we have discussed, or you will risk and dare to remember this and ask that it be something other and that it happen now. The reason, this is one night. Do you know how many people really trying to do this? How long it would take? How many days to make sure it was perfect? How, you know, is it the right field? Is it the right size? Do you have roads leading to it? I mean, infinite number of complications. We are not talking about anything that takes time, space. We are talking about now. And all I windbag all these years is, how about now? When it's all said and done, the message is one thing. How about now? How about now? The willingness to just say, from the depths of the being, to acknowledge that there is creating being done. And your willingness to identify deeply within you those things that you wish to create, and then opening up the consciousness and letting this whirlwind, which is the creator with you, participate in it. But your job, my friends, why one field instead of another? That may be a mundane question, but it's all important. Those who call, receive. You could say to me, and I can hear it in many of you, I've already done the calling. I've done the calling. And I'd like to give you an illustration that is not really valid, but close to it. One of those lies again. You say, God, come and change my life. And so, God comes, and he's standing there. He waits, and he waits. And you're waiting, you're waiting. And God says, how do you want me to change your life? In what way do you want me to change your life? And your responsibility is to say, this way. Otherwise, you know, I mean, God is not going to come and say, oh, I know you want green skin and pointed ears. I knew it all along. And I'm going to change your reality. Do you understand? Your part of it is this spontaneous calling in and the stating of. And in the stating of, with the clarity, and this is the important word, the expectation, then it begins. Without the expectation and the clarity, it cannot be done. So the excitement just goes on, moment after moment. The willingness to examine your life and to decide which of those things are in it that are no longer maximum for you, no matter how minute, and to get your power into alignment and to make the decision to have the changes, and in that holding of your anticipation and knowing of what it is you want, and then the fullness of the asking, then it begins to happen. The thing that sounds the death knell that makes it not happen is an inner mantra that says, this won't work. How do you reverse an inner mantra that says, this won't work? You're all very intelligent. You're all very creative. You already know. You do it by doing it. How many times have we said this? You do it by doing it. You realize that you have this humbug going through you that says, no, 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 it won't work. It's never worked before. It'll never work again. No, 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 no. You become aware of the voice. You become conscious of it. And you listen until you hear it clearly, whatever the voice is saying to you, and you, with sweet, gentle firmness, say, no. Now, we're going to do a simple experiment, which I hope will prove some of this to you. So if you would take your meditation positions, please.